Number six is fill in the blanks. The king saw, yes, fingers of a man's hand that okay.
No American standard.
I put appeared upon, but anyway, wrote is correct. Upon what? The of the. Okay. That's from Daniel 5 and verse 5. The excavation of the throne room in Babylon offers some interesting explanation of some of the things we read here. It was 170 by 55 feet a hall that was entered through three spacious courtyards that led from the entrance just inside the what they call the Ishtar Gate. And some of the wall space was covered with blue enameled brick. And the other parts of it were covered with, you guessed it, plaster. Now this is what they have found in excavating these things. Now, what did this, or what effect did this have upon the king? What effect? Yes?
The knees knocked.
Yeah.
He had to sit down. His face grew pale.
Yeah.
His thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack.
Okay. The king had evidently arisen from the chair in which he had been seated to lead the festivities and stood to watch the hand writing. And he became so frightened that his legs gave way and he literally collapsed, fell to the floor. His immediate reaction resembled a case, and this is just an observation, of delirium tremors, or tremens, I call it tremors, which would be the effect that alcohol would have on somebody, would cause terrifying hallucinations and cause eventually to pass out or even to fall. Now, for whom did the king call?
Okay.
He called to the wise men of Babylon. He considered astrologers and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers to be the wise men of Babylon. That's who he called on. But did you notice who he didn't call? Mm-hmm. Who would that be?
Daniel.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, this, I think this becomes evident from the way that he addresses Daniel when he does come. So we'll deal with that a little bit later. Go ahead, Daryl.
Please help me correct me. This, to me, seems like a generational issue. Mm-hmm. That this king, which is the son of the one that's out battling, right?
Right.
So he's not of Daniel's generation. Matter of fact, he may be two generations ago.
Yeah.
So just like we see with Rehoboam, who does not listen to the older, wiser men, chooses to listen to his peers instead of true wisdom.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's very often what happens with youth. A youth, by its very nature, is impetuous. And especially if it's something new and revolutionary and exciting, and you know, why do we want to do it the old way? Do it the new way, you know. And that's what he was victim of. What reward was offered to the one who could read and interpret the writing? Now, it's interesting here. Read and interpret. What does that imply? Terry?
The king didn't read, at least not the language it was written in, but probably didn't read.
Okay. Either he didn't read, or, like Terry said, the language was unfamiliar to him. Some have suggested that the hand was unfamiliar to him. In other words, it was written in such a way that it wasn't easily read. But here's something on the wall, and a hand came out of nowhere and wrote it. And that's cause right there for being pretty much scared to death. But what was offered to the one who could read it and interpret it? There, Daryl?
Can I back up half a step?
Okay.
We have a room full of 1,000 people. Is that about right?
Yeah, yeah.
And these are supposed to be his leaders?
Yep.
And these are also supposed to be the people who are educated?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it would make sense to me that this is a hand that is a language for which no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an assumption, because they are a power that draws from lots of different cultures.
Yeah, but it was a language that he should have known. And it was written in such a way that either he didn't quite understand the meaning of it and thus needed someone to read it and tell him what it meant, or it was, like I said, in a hand that he couldn't read.
Well, what I'm meaning is that he's got 1,000 people right in front of him.
Yeah.
And no one knows what it is.
No one knows what it is. That's right. Yes, Ellen.
So, just trying to understand, how did you get the understanding that he should have known what it is? Like, that it wasn't a language that no one knew.
Well, it's actually in Chaldean. It's written in. Let me see.
Interpretation. For instance, I don't read French, so if somebody's reading something to me in French, they're going to translate it as they read it.
Right. Right.
Into the language that I know. Daniel, I believe, translated this into Chaldean.
That's how I read it.
That's when he actually...
Let me see. I got some notes here somewhere. No, actually it was in Aramaic. Because the word that he interprets to him, mene, is an Aramaic noun referring to a weight of 50 shekels. And mene is what was on the wall. And that's what he read to him and interpreted to him. So it was in Aramaic. But Aramaic was a universal language. And so he should have understood that. And, okay, go ahead, Terry.
Well, the words that Daniel used when we looked down at verse 25, this is the inscription that was written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he was reading it off the wall.
Right.
So he prefaced it with what he saw.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
What it sounds like, but...
Yeah. There's another consideration, too. What was written on that wall, he probably wasn't really taking in what it was or the meaning of it, because it was such an event that it just threw him for a loop. And remember, he's pretty well soused on booze. So he probably, you know, had a little trouble focusing. But he knew there was writing on the wall, and it meant something, and he wanted to know now what it is. Dylan, do you have another comment?
I was just so confused. If, for instance, with the, like, going all the way back with the dream, the first dream that Daniel interpreted.
Yeah.
Only Daniel, through God's power,
mm-hmm.
would have been able to interpret it. It was
yeah.
proven that no one else could interpret it.
Right.
And then again with the next stream, only Daniel, through God's power, could interpret it.
Yeah.
Why would something be inscribed on a wall in a language that others would be able to interpret, I mean, to read, and give some kind of interpretation? It may not be the right one. Why would it be written in that, or why would it be written in a language that only Daniel would be able to interpret through God's power? Because, yes, he would be able to, as we read here, that Daniel said, it was that mina, or whatever the word, through the Arabic, which meant the 50 pieces, but how do we know that what was written was what exactly he was saying? It wasn't that it was some kind of language that no one knows and that Daniel interpreted.
It implies that he was reading from the wall whenever he told him what it was. I want you to notice the wise men that were called came and they could not read the writing or make known its interpretation. There was something about the mode in which this was written that they saw something there, but they didn't know what it was. And it had to be read to them by somebody who can interpret it. Susan? Okay.
Do we know that they could see it? Do we know that it was written for everybody to see? I'm a little confused when you go back earlier and it's talking about. We know it's that he could do it. I don't know if he's removed at this point from everybody else. And he sees the hand and nobody else sees it. Is he with everybody else? Is he isolated at this point? And it just makes me wonder if it was visible to everybody.
Okay, Daryl?
I think the answer is probably yes, and here's why. Yes, I'm thinking. Because when his mother, the woman who comes to advise him to call for Daniel,
the queen,
she's saying that because, well, if you think somebody's really crazy, you're not going to suggest something that's wise. So I'm thinking that she may also have seen it and now say, this is something for Daniel. That's what it just seems to me.
But didn't say they couldn't see the writing.
That's the point.
Right.
I've gone over this context again just as we're talking here, and I see no indication that only he could see what was up there, but he couldn't interpret it. He couldn't understand it. And in the other cases, it was plainly stated that he knew what the dream was and nobody else did. So this, I think, would indicate that probably there was, at the least, everyone who was in the hall knew something had happened. And so they saw some kind of a hand up there writing, and they're like, just get this bottle away from me. I think I've had enough. Because it was quite unusual. Vicki? Yep, the Samaritan Pentateuch, yeah.
And then down here, another thing that it says, the words were in such a character as to be illegible to the Chaldees, God reserving this honor to Daniel. So I don't know, that's
okay.
Just a thought.
That was what I had remembered reading, was the idea of illegibility to the Chaldeans, and thus, you know, Daniel was able to interpret it and tell him what it was. Yes, sir.
So in other words, it'd be like taking a young person today and having them read the oldest English. So it,
you ought to try that sometime.
No, but it's completely foreign to you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting comparison, because if you read some of the lately I've been reading some books and some articles that were written in the 1600s, and old English, I mean, it is almost unintelligible. You have to remember that they wrote words down the way they sounded. And so you have to look at the word and say, okay, what is does this word sound like? And whenever you get the sound, oh, well, I know what that word is. You can go on. But, for instance, let's see. Show, S-H-O-W, they spelled it S-H-E-W, and they pronounced it shoe. And on our family crest, the saying that's on there has Old English on it. It's not written in Gaelic or anything else. It's Old English. And that's how it's done. So that might be a comparison here. Here, this is a language that's influenced by the Jewish or the Israelite background, and it's not plainly legible to them.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yep, ma'am. I'm sorry.
And beyond that, the reading of it, even if they could read it, they didn't know how to interpret it.
Yeah. Yeah, even when he told them what the words were, mm-hmm. You know, here's the words. Okay, now what do we do with that? It had no meaning to them. But it certainly, whenever he laid out the meaning of it to him, it had a great deal of meaning, no doubt about it. All right. Any other discussion? Okay, now where did we leave off? Let's see. Oh, yeah, here we go. Okay, what reward, get back to this again, what reward was offered to anyone who could read it and interpret it? Dylan?
They were to be clothed in purple and have gold chains around their neck, and they shall be a third ruler in the kingdom.
Okay, we're going to deal with that third ruler a little bit later, but that's correct. That is correct. The reward included being the third ruler of the kingdom. Oh, I heard of that. Indicate below the ranking of the rulers of the Babylonian Empire. Now, what three rulers were involved here? Or two rulers plus whoever interpreted it? Because we're dealing with Belshazzar. What's the situation? I think Daryl mentioned just a minute ago, but what's the situation? Go ahead, Evan.
We spent a good deal of time on this last week in the fact that Nabonidus was the true ruler, but he had placed his son as regent over Babylon when he was off to war.
That's right. So, Nabonidus, Belshazzar, I had that chart up last week, didn't I? And then the third ruler would be whoever interpreted the dream, the vision. Not dream, it's a vision. Okay, that's exactly right. Now, let's see, what's this next one? Oh, this one, the next one is A or B. That's the two options, okay? The wise men, A, could read and interpret the writing, and B, could not read and interpret the writing. I think we know the answer. I think it's B. Anybody have anything different? Well, that's good. Okay, who told the king of one whom Nebuchadnezzar had made master of all the wise men? Who was it? Yes.
Queen, which probably was his mother.
Probably so. Probably so. Some have gone so far as to say, maybe his grandmother even. Could be Nebuchadnezzar's wife, which is very possible. But indeed, he had made Daniel the head over all of these wise men. And I thought it was interesting that... who was the queen referred to? Okay, I'm going to deal with another question on that. She referred to Daniel, as we know in question 13. But I want to look at something here. There is a man in the kingdom who has an excellent spirit. What does that mean? An excellent spirit. Evan?
I didn't look that up in particular, but with the rest of the context, that he has this close relationship with God tended to make me think that that's what she was talking about. But
okay.
Again, I didn't particularly look up that phrase. So.
Okay. Look down at verse 11. What does that say, Dylan?
There's a man in your kingdom in whom is the Spirit of the Holy God.
Right.
And in the Hebrew?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers.
Okay. Inasmuch and as an excellent spirit. That's where the idea comes from.
And this is how Nebuchadnezzar referred to him, too.
Yep.
When he interpreted his vision.
That's right. That's right.
And Nebuchadnezzar forwarded
him. Yep, that's exactly right. Okay, I thought that was interesting to draw that out because that is a significant statement there. He is a man who has the Spirit of the Holy God. Very important. Okay, question 14. What was offered to Daniel by the king if he could read and interpret the writing? Now, I want you to notice in his address to Daniel, something significant. Are you that Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? In other words, who are you to be so wise? Because after all, you're just a captive from Judah. And then he says, I've heard that the Spirit of God is in you, and light and understanding and so forth. And all the astrologers and everybody, they couldn't read this and make it known to me. And I've heard that you can give interpretation and explain enigmas. Now, if you can read the writing and make known its interpretation, what did he promise? Clothed with purple, gold of chain around his neck, and he would be third in the kingdom. Really, the words here kind of sound like a man that's under the influence of alcohol, because he kind of rambles a little bit. And he alludes to Daniel's origin and his age. And actually, he probably was about the same age at this time as Belshazzar was, more likely. But the fact that he was brought from Jerusalem indicated that he considered him to be a little bit inferior. A little bit inferior. Yes?
Is
Could it also have been that the king was doing it, or was saying those things sarcastically in the sense of, oh, I'm going to give you $1 billion.
Yeah.
Oh, you little servant, you can do that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It proved that Belshazzar thought a whole lot more of his own importance than he should have. Yes.
But I think, like Nebuchadnezzar was astounded by his own dreams and very troubled, this troubled Belshazzar. I don't keep on saying Belshazzar, which is Daniel's name.
Yeah.
is troubled by it to the maybe a similar extent his father was. That he knows, he needs to know what it's about. It isn't,
yeah.
It's completely out of the ordinary.
Yep.
And if his wise men can interpret it, he needs to know. So there's a certain amount of desperation, so to speak, in needing someone to give him this interpretation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And desperation, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. What was Daniel's answer to him? Terry?
Keep your stuff.
Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. He says, I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. We can well imagine by now some of the drunken revelers had been kind of brought to a point of sobriety because of the events that were going on. And kind of a hush. Remember, we talked about the mad party that was going on last week? But a kind of a hush descended on the scene. And then the king's ears were scorched by what Daniel had to say. Keep your gifts. No one dared to speak that way to the king. Yes.
Some time ago, studying this, the idea came across of what happens to especially the high rulers when a new group comes into power. You know, very often they are either put to death or, if not put to death, at least imprisoned or banished.
Yep.
Daniel doesn't want any responsibility in that area.
No,
I don't want to be third in the kingdom.
No, you keep your own gifts. Give them to somebody else. But Daniel proved that he had no personal respect for this king because of the way he was. And he wasn't afraid of him. And who gave Nebuchadnezzar his kingdom, majesty, glory and honor? Who gave it to him? God did. That's right. The Most High God. This is what Daniel says about it. Nebuchadnezzar was brought to the position of power in the Babylonian Empire by divine appointment. Now, he ordered the three to come out of the furnace. Remember that? And approach him. In giving the order, he called them servants of the Most High God. Thus, Nebuchadnezzar recognized that the God that these men faithfully served was truly God. No doubt about it. Because he could do things these other gods couldn't possibly do. The term Most High God occurs 13 times in Daniel. And more than any other book except, guess what? Guess it? Psalms. That's right. Psalms. Of the 13 occurrences in Daniel, 7 pertain to Nebuchadnezzar. 2 of them to Belshazzar. And the four others are found over in the context of chapter 7. Interesting, indeed. Okay, any comments, questions? All right. Why was Nebuchadnezzar deposed from his kingly throne and his glory was taken from him? Why did it happen? Here we have Daniel telling people. Yes?
I'm going to go back.
Okay.
Another reason to me that he says, let your gifts be for yourself and give your words to another, is because he knew what his interpretation was. And he knew what was to become. I mean, it goes along with what Evan said, but, but no way did he want to align himself with someone that was so, you know, disrespectful to God and had forgotten God and so forth. He didn't want to be aligned with that,
right,
no matter what the outcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Now, why was Nebuchadnezzar deposed from his kingly throne and his glory taken from him? Specifically says it here in the context. Terry?
It says that his head was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride.
Yeah.
He was a very proud man.
He totally failed to recognize that the power he possessed was God's, not his own. And he became arrogant and proud. That's what his problem was. That was it in a nutshell. But God humbled him and stripped him of all of his glory and honor. And eventually, well, he actually took the throne away from him for the time that he was out in the field, being an animal. But gave it back to him and gave it to him to be his throne for a period of time until it, of course, was given to his descendants. But through the facts of Nebuchadnezzar's 7-year insanity, or we call it 7 periods, whichever, this may have been something that was, and I mentioned this before, something that was hidden from the general populace. In other words, the average Joe on the street didn't know this happened to their king. But it was known to the royal family. They didn't have any question about it. But you'd think that Belshazzar would have taken note of that. But how easily we forget. We forget. Now, when was Nebuchadnezzar's throne returned to him? Whenever he did what? What? Right. That's it. He knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whoever he chooses. That's when he humbled himself before God. Now, through this discipline, Nebuchadnezzar came to realize the greatness of God's authority. Daniel 4, verses 34 and 35 says, at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High, praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generations. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? So that was a pretty, talk about a turnaround. That was a pretty drastic change in Nebuchadnezzar. Now, getting back on track. What was the charge against Belshazzar? What was the charge against Belshazzar? Daryl?
Which ones? There was quite a few, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
One was his pride, if you would.
Yes.
Another was making what was God's house becoming common.
Right.
That would probably be the top two.
Right. Terry? Oh, Daryl, I'm going to go on.
Please go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Terry.
And I think another thing that he points out at the beginning, he knew what happened to his father.
Yes.
And he ignored it, or he didn't choose to remember it. He didn't learn from the past.
And he includes in here his praising the gods of silver and gold and bronze and iron and wood and stone. And this is the thing that always is pointed out about these gods, which do not see or hear or know God who holds your breath in his hand. Daryl.
What was to me interesting was the accusation, obviously true, that he exalted himself. But the last part was, and you did not glorify God.
Yeah, that's right.
As if it's a separate charge on top of all of this.
Yep. Yeah, he had not only followed in his father or his grandfather's footsteps, he'd gone even beyond. And that's why he is, well, we'll get into it. That's why he's going to get it. Okay, Daryl?
Well, like you pointed out, or we have, I guess, that even Nebuchadnezzar glorified God in saying about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Oh, yeah.
Dead. So, yeah, but the difference between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, like Daniel said, you saw this. Nebuchadnezzar had the experience firsthand.
Yeah.
But you knew it.
Yep.
So therefore, you don't need the evidence of firsthand. You
right.
saw it.
That's right. That's right. What did Daniel say was the writing on the wall? Dylan, you keep mouthing something back there, and I'm sure you're going to say exactly what those words were. Okay. The you parson, or you, it's you, some versions say you farson.
Yeah.
That simple, the you on there simply means and then the word. Peres or parson. It comes from the Greek word, or the Greek word, the Aramaic word peres. But let's go back and look at them. I already said what mene means. It's a noun referring to a weight of 50 shekels equal to 1.25 pounds from the verb minna, which means, here's what it means, to number or reckon. To number or reckon. Then, the word tickle, okay, what's it mean?
To weigh, or to be weighed.
Yeah, to weigh or to be weighed, okay. It actually refers to a shekel, which is 2/5 of an ounce, and it means to weigh. That's the way its meaning is. And then parson, or parsing. Dylan?
You parson means to break into two or to divide, like half mina or half shekel.
Okay, that's right.
There's also an addition, is there not?
What?
Is there not another part to parse? Parsing,
no.
Persian?
No.
No, it's
a verb,
divide, it's a verb
meaning to break into or to divide.
Yeah.
So, here's what the words mean, but what's the interpretation thereof? What did Daniel say that this was telling Belshazzar? Daryl, go ahead.
The worst part is that God numbered your kingdom to put an end to it, as Scripture says.
Mm-hmm.
Going on, Tekel, or Tekel, you have been weighed on the scale and have been found deficient.
Right.
And the last part, well, that's where I made the move, talking about the Persians, but the definition of the interpretation, your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and Persians.
Yeah. Weighed in the balances and found wanting? Well, first of all, numbered your kingdom and it's finished. That, in other words, the idea is God has set a time period that your reign is going to be, and it's come to its end now. It's coming right down to the wire. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. In other words, there's something that when the balance is put up here, that on your side of it is wanting. Wanting. There you go. I'll get it right. Well, you know, you're looking at it backwards, though. Wanting. In other words, you're missing something. Okay? But the real crux of it is your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. I want you to notice the language that's used here. He doesn't say your kingdom is going to be divided. It is divided. Now that's how imminent this was to him. It wasn't something that was going to happen off in the future. It means now it's given to the Medes and the Persians. Whoa. That's pretty scary. It'd be pretty hard on a fella that was trying to shake off a hangover, too. Because that's a lot to digest all at once. But did he have reason to be scared? Yeah, he sure did. He sure did. But that brings us up to another question. What empire was to follow the Babylonian Empire? Terry?
Medo-Persian.
The Medo-Persian. That's right. Exactly right. So the message was that because of the moral and spiritual degradation of Belshazzar and his kingdom, God would terminate the Babylonian Empire. Now I want you to realize the significance of this. The Nebuchadnezzar was in the great image, the head of gold. He was top of the heap. But the empire had come to the point where God said, no more. That's the end of it. And he gave it to the Medes and the Persians. We'll talk more about that as we go along, because there's more questions that'll deal with it. Okay, what reward was given to Daniel? I thought Daniel said, keep your reward. Didn't he? Vicky?
He was given it, and Daniel allowed it, because this would show God's hand in it all, and that it was only by God's divine guidance that he was able to do this. So it was giving the glory to God.
That's right. But I want you to take something into consideration. What significance would it be if a president declared that you were the new vice president and then the next day your nation's gone? you know, it wouldn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything. Daniel knew that. He knew it. But he wanted to make it clear that he was not seeking the reward. He did not seek the reward. What did he seek? God's praise and glory. Yeah. That's what was important. What is it that happened to Belshazzar that very night? That very night. What?
He died.
He died. I want to give you some information, and I'll use this to just finish out this lesson, or this question, I mean, for tonight. And then we'll end with, we're almost finished the next. We're almost finished, but I'm going to read this to you because I think it's interesting. The city had been under assault by the armies of Cyrus. In anticipation of a long siege, the city had stored supplies to last up for 20 years. The Euphrates River ran through the city from north to south, so the residents had ample water supply. Belshazzar had a false sense of security because the Persian army led by Yugbara, and remember this name, we're going to talk about him again, Yugbaru, was outside Babylon city walls. Their army was divided. Part was stationed where the river entered the city on the north, and part were where the river exited the city on the south. The army diverted the water that was north of the city by digging a canal from the river to a nearby lake. Isn't that clever? With the water diverted, its level receded, and the soldiers were able to enter the city by going through the sluice gate. Since the walls were unguarded, the Persians, once inside the city, were able to conquer it without a fight. Significantly, the defeat of Babylon fulfilled not only the prophecy that Daniel made earlier of that same night, but also a prophecy of Isaiah, found in Isaiah 47, the first five verses. The overthrow of Babylon took place the night of the 16th of Tishri, which was, I love this, October 12th, 539 B.C. Okay? The rule of the Medes and Persians was the second phase of the times of the Gentiles. The silver chest and arms of the image in Daniel 2. The events in chapter 5 illustrate that God is so sovereign and moves according to his predetermined plan. Those events also anticipate the final overthrow of the Gentile world powers that rebel against God and are characterized by moral and spiritual corruption. Isn't that interesting? I read that over and I read it again and I thought, I can't improve on that, but I can share it with you. And that's what I decided to do. Okay, that's about all we have time for tonight. Let's mark it off here on question 25. And then we'll talk about lessons that we've learned from chapter 5. And we'll go into, behold, chapter 6.